Here's an environmental disaster you may have missed. A 109-car freight train carrying more than 3 million gallons of crude oil derailed and burned earlier this week. The train was traveling from North Dakota. It derailed in the rural town of Mount Carbon, West Virginia. Hundreds were evacuated as a fire burned for more than 2 days and oil seeped into the nearby Kanawha River. The oil boom in the United States has produced what are called bomb trains. As domestic sources of oil and gas are developed and increasingly need ways to get to consumers, we turn now to Russell Gold, Wall Street Journal energy reporter and author of The Boom, How Fracking Ignited the American Energy Revolution and Changed the World. Russell, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how does demand change the number of trains and the scale of what we're seeing in this fireball in West Virginia?
Essentially, what's happened is that we're just producing so much more oil out of North Dakota than we did a few years ago, and we've drilled the wells, but we haven't built the pipelines. So the industry is just moving all of this oil by train out of North Dakota. We've never seen this before.
And 10 years ago, would there be these trains?
Oh, absolutely not. 10 years ago, this industry didn't exist.
And the last time I spoke with you, the oil price was much lower. It's really the $100 barrel oil and the availability of resource in North Dakota that's driving this.
No, absolutely. Very high-priced oil, over $100 oil, really gave the financial incentive for these people to go out and drill. Oil prices are much lower, more like $50. But, you know, they're still drilling, and production is still growing in North Dakota right now.
Are these trains really called bomb trains?
Yeah, some of the critics are calling them bomb trains, and there's something to it. The oil in these trains is coming from North Dakota. That oil is very gassy. It has a lot of propanes and butanes in it, so that when there is a derailment and explosion, these trains are going up with enormous fireballs, 10, 15, 20-story fireballs. It's not like anything we've seen before in an oil fire.
And do people have any idea that these trains are traveling through their communities?
Well, that's a really great question. This is being fought right now. Railroads and, to a certain extent, the oil industry is fighting to prevent disclosure of this information because they're saying, well, we don't want the information to get out to terrorist groups. But people in communities are saying, well, wait a second, we have a right to know. We want to know where these trains are coming from and where they're, how they're passing through the communities. And actually, most of the time, they don't really, there's no public information about this. The best they can do is walk outside their door and watch the trains go by and look for the placards to figure out if they're on the route.
Russell Gold, has what's changed in the last decade been the size of the trains going from, 20-car trains to 109-car trains, or is it more trains, or is it both?
It's both. Back in 2008, early 2009, these trains essentially did not exist. We just were not moving oil on trains in any amounts. I think back in 2009, if I remember the numbers correctly, we moved 21,000 barrels a day. We're now moving 50 times as much. So essentially, just in the last few years, the industry has created this new way to move oil around the country.
Now, people who watch Current Affairs might think in this conversation that, that's what that Keystone Energy pipeline is going to do, reduce the demand for trains. Does the Keystone pipeline have anything to do with this transport of oil and gas?
Almost nothing. Keystone would bring oil down from places like North Dakota to the Gulf Coast, to the refineries around the Gulf Coast. Most of these trains are heading east and west. They're heading to the coastal refineries in Philadelphia and New Jersey and also around the Seattle area and down into California. That's where the oil industry gets the best money for this crude. So even if Keystone, by some miracle, were to be built, it really wouldn't impact these trains at all.
Russell, who's supposed to regulate these trains, and what do they need to do to be current with the demand that's changed so much, as you described?
Well, both the state of North Dakota and the federal government are right now in the middle of trying to come up with new regulations. The White House is looking at a set of regulations that the Department of Transportation sent over just earlier this month to make train cars, the tanker cars, stronger, to improve the braking and to slow these trains down. So that's in the works. And the state of North Dakota is looking also at a requirement that would essentially say before you put oil into a train car, you have to test it and to figure out how vaporous and combustible it is. And if it's too vaporous and combustible, you actually have to do what's called stabilizing it or deadening it so that, frankly, it won't explode with such ferocity.
Finally, tankers are several orders of magnitude beyond the capacity of these trains in terms of the fuel that they carry. But what are the environmental risks when something like this happens to the Kanawha River and other places?
Well, sure. There are certainly environmental risks of crude oil getting into the rivers. But that's really not what we've been seeing with these incidents because frankly, when the oil gets out, it explodes. It burns off. So you're not seeing large number of barrels leaking into the river like we saw in Kalamazoo, Michigan, a couple of years ago. This is really more of a public safety issue. And I think what people are really worried about is that these incidents have happened in relatively small towns like Mount Carbon and Castleton, North Dakota, Aliceville, Alabama. But these trains are going through large cities, Portland, Oregon, Philadelphia, Chicago, Minneapolis. And people are concerned that if there's an accident in a very densely populated area, we won't be talking about one person injured, as we saw in West Virginia, but we'd be talking about a real catastrophe.
Russell Gold is Wall Street Journal's senior energy reporter and author of The Boom, How Fracking Ignited the American Energy Revolution and Changed the World. Russell, always great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.